He said, I'm going to try and do something that I've never done before. What I'm going to do is give you an introduction and just give you my headings and the reason for those headings, because I don't want to detach from that. So what you're going to do is that I'm going to need to switch this on first. Okay. My subject was this one. I am the resurrection and the life. So if you've got a Bible, you are going to need to not turn to John 1, but to John 11. That's my mistake, 17 to 27. So John 11, 17 to 27. So I'm going to give you my introduction. I watched recently Dad's Army, the missing episodes. Have you managed to watch those yet? Okay. Well, what happened with Dad's Army is that there were three episodes that they didn't record. Or they did record, but they lost them. So what they've done is used the actual script and got new actors in to produce the three. And one of the missing episodes is where Private Fraser is promoted to Corporal Fraser. Now, I want you to see, just to show how old you are, he has one phrase that you are supposed to know. And that phrase is... Sorry. Can I apologise? Okay. You probably have got no idea what this is, is it? Okay, I'm going to come here just for a little bit, because the sermon's not going to take long. Okay, if you can imagine that this is a comedy show, okay, excuse us, just for a minute. The comedy show is called Dad's Army, okay? And if you can imagine that in World War II, all our young men went out to fight, okay? But all the old guys, people like me, we had to stay at home, and their job was to guard the shores of England. But can you imagine if the Germans came and they were faced by an old person like me? It wasn't, and they were put into an army called the Home Guard, and that was what they did. So this is a comedy show about the Home Guard. It's about the old people, but you can enjoy it. So if you go, if you look at it on either on BBC iPlayer, excuse us, or YouTube, you can watch it, because, and all you have to remember is that this is like a it's about like a load of old men that are trying to save England in the middle of the war, and lots of things go wrong. And this guy here is a guy called Private Fraser. And Private Fraser was a Scottish guy, and he used to think that things went wrong, so his phrase was, "We're all doomed." So he used to think this. Because Fraser, this guy, I'm just going to talk to you for a little while. So, and then I'm just going to give you headings, and then we're going to have cake. So if you can imagine, Fraser was very bleak. He was quite pessimistic outlook on life. And everything was bleak in the platoon. He always thought that things would go wrong. And he would always actually find reasons for feeling that we're all doomed. So that would be what would happen. And what used to happen is that the platoon got themselves into a mess time and time again. This is the comedy show. It probably has nothing to do. And one of the other things they used to, do you remember this? He used to say, so they used to get themselves into a mess, and they used to say things like, "It's a terrible way to die." Do you not remember that one? So, which they never did. Do you not, have you never seen it either?
I have.
Oh, okay. So he used to say it was a terrible way to die. And because what he believed is, this is where the serious point comes in, is that he was living consistently with the closeness that actually that they would die, that actually they were a useless bunch, weren't they? And actually, if any Germans did come over, which eventually they did they come on the submarine? You know, don't tell them your name, Pike. Was that one where they came in? Do you remember that one? I'm just going to have a loudest... do you not remember that? And they just used to think that they would never ever last. The point of all that is that actually every single person in this room actually will die. Man, woman, child will die. It's probably... the most unifying fact in humanity. I don't know whether you noticed that. In humanity, what is the most common thing that the world has, even across nations, is this fact that we will all die. And you're going to say, Nigel, you started off well, that was really funny, and now that's a great way to start a sermon. I know it's depressing, but actually it is part of life. And what we do is we take it away from life, don't we? Many of you have buried or cremated loved ones. I've lost my dad. I'm too old now, but I did. I lost my dad quite young. Lost my mum. Lost my father-in-law and my mother-in-law. I have no aunties or uncles anymore. So I'm no longer, as it were. I was a nephew. No longer, I was going to say niece then, but I'm not that either. But I'm not that. My brother died, and you probably heard me tell the story that I have two sisters that I never met that also died. I'm almost the last Lloyd standing, as it were. Go on. In the job that I've done, that I've actually taken quite a lot of funerals, some of them bizarre, I have to say, and some of them quite normal, as it were, but is a funeral normal? Some of them for family, when family have asked me, I've said, yeah, I will do it. Sometimes I've been asked and thought I couldn't do it because of the emotion that comes up in and around that. I people ask me whether I wanted to take part in my brother's funeral, just felt that I couldn't manage to do it. And the reason for that is that with death, does not grieving and sadness come part and parcel of that? That you live with that. That sometimes it's quite heavy, is it not? You just feel that it can take over your whole body. And I think what happens is that people don't. Their adjustment afterwards is also quite a challenge. We had my Callie's cousin recently who would stay with us. Marg, if you met her when she came to church here on Sunday morning, wept through Joe's worship. It was terrible, Joe's worship, just made her weep. And the song selection was so bad that she wept all the way through it. And I'm lying, by the way, just looking at me, see whether it is. And she just said one of these things. She said, I'm not alone, but I am lonely. And that's quite deep, isn't it, when you hear that sort of things. And the reason for all of that, and so when you get to the points, you're only going to get 3 points, okay? And I'm just going to give you a brief explanation, and that's it. The reason for that is that many centuries ago, two sisters, in reality, were grieving over the death of their brother, Lazarus. So when we read it, I want you to not read the Bible and stories as if they're some sort of storybook and cold. When Lazarus died, Martha and Mary were affected by it. It's there, and it is for them a reality that their brother Lazarus died. Now, I know that the story is familiar to you, and probably the emotions are familiar. But some of the stuff, if you think about it, also the tension would have been in the household would have been quite something, considering that we know the differences between Mary and Martha. So Jesus had heard, hadn't he, that Lazarus had died, if you remember that. And for some reason, he stays 2 days longer where he was. And when he finally arrives in the place called Bethany, the village, John chapter 11, verse 17, he found that Lazarus had been in the tomb 4 days. 4 days. And there are different views. I don't know whether you've ever read books and commentaries about it, about why Jesus delayed. And some theologians say, well, we wanted to make the miracle greater. Can you make a miracle greater? You know, that's, you know, there's lots of things. It's all to do with the sovereignty of God and all that sort of stuff. There are different views and different commentaries. But I think when you strip it down, the point I think here is in terms of Lazarus, because you've got to the 4-day period. So was he sleeping? Was he in some sort of coma? Was he just ill? And, you know, maybe we could get Ben along and, you know, a few others, and Liz can distribute the pills and, you know, that sort of stuff. And, you know, I don't know. And Rupert can do the stuff on the way. You know, we can have a team go to Lazarus and work all of that stuff out. I think the point really is the simple point that Lazarus was dead. That's the real point. The 4-day thing is nothing other to get into your head and my head that Lazarus was really, 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 really dead. That's the point. Take the complicated things out of it, because actually the complicated things don't help you. They just help your intellect, as it were. Get the simple thing, that the 4-day thing is to get into your head that we are dealing with somebody that has been in the grave a long time. Now, what would have happened in that time is that he would have been embalmed and that he would have been prepared. So nobody in terms of that time is going to get to the point where you think, well, he is sick. Actually, he was embalmed. He was placed down in the tomb. And don't stop laughing. I'm not going to do it. Do you want me to do it?
No.
Okay, I won't do it. Because I always think, when we get to the end of it, I don't know whether you've ever noticed this, that sometimes in the Bible that you think that the Bible tells you a joke. Have you not ever seen that? Because to think that God hasn't got a better sense of humour than you is a bit strange. So I want you to imagine, that you can read this afterwards, because I'm just going to do the point. So I want you to imagine that Jesus has gone down in the tomb. You can read this. The tomb is down. It's under the ground because it's meant to be hygienic. So there are steps. How many steps do you want, Dan? 5? Any more on this side? Okay. So down in the tomb would have been a slab. Is that not right? And a slab, right? Check this out to see whether I'm true or not. Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead and leaves the tomb. There is no evidence that he calls him out. There is no evidence that Jesus took off the embalming strips or anything like this. So I want you to imagine the first thing that the people know that Lazarus is alive, that's the crowd, is that when Lazarus comes leaping out towards the end up the steps. Do you not read it and do you not laugh? Do you not? What do you read then when you read your Bible? Do you not?
Because Jesus told them to take the bandages off.
Because he did. Jesus said, take the bandages off. So poor old Lazarus goes, I'm alive. And he goes, I can't get the sniffing out. No. Do you not read that story? Did you not? What do you read? He's lying there on the slab saying, I am alive, but I'm still buried. Because it's all around, think about it, it's all around his head. And he asks them to go and do it. So there's a moment that Lazarus is alive, but he's still wrapped up. Then you think, well, do you not think that if you were, I would have prayed for him with a pair of scissors. Would you not have gone? But perhaps he didn't want him. You see, in my mind, excuse me, I thought perhaps he didn't want him to go out naked. No? Okay. But so I don't know. I don't know.
I shared this in Rouge, a lady laughed so much about herself.
She did. But obviously in Wrexham, you are so refined. No, we don't laugh at that in Wrexham. Anyway. So anyway, okay. So verse 20 then. So verse 20. So when Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, but Mary remained seated in the house. Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been there, sorry, that's on there, isn't it? There it is. Lord, if you'd been there, my brother would not have died. Can you catch the emotion in that? Think about that. Lord, if you had not been here, my brother would not have died. But even now, I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you. And Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha says to him, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day. And Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet he shall live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? And she said, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming into the world. Okay. So what she says is quite extraordinary. See, Martha heard that Jesus was approaching the village. She went to meet him while Mary remained in the house. Strange. Why does Martha go to meet Jesus while Mary stays put? Is it simply that, you know, she's the doer and the other one is not? You can get that from other scriptures. She's the one that gets things done. Is she the impatient one? You know, that is it a personality trait? I don't know. Mate, is it just different ways of coping with grief? You know, silent way, noisy way. And Kelly and I have had a recent conversation about our different ways of coping with things. So Kelly doesn't verbalise anything at home. I verbalise everything. So probably that would be me. Kelly would be at home and I would be on the road, sort this out. And Kelly said to me, can't you just sometimes be quiet? Do you have to verbalise everything? And I went, yeah. Isn't that right? So Julie's looking at me. Which one are you, Julie? Let me guess. You're Kelly. Yes. Does Pete verbalise everything?
No, he's quiet.
Oh, okay. Oh, sorry. But if you think about it, Martha's words to Jesus must have been hard actually to hear. Catch the emotion. Don't catch the biblical story. Catch the emotion of it. Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. How would you have said that? How would you have said that? Can you catch it? It's not just cold, it's reality. You see, grief can cause us to be harsh. I think when people are grieving, we must cut them quite a bit of slack. Because they grieve in different ways. Kelly and I, again, talking about our marriage, and we've lost different people. We've had to learn that about each other. We both cope with grief in completely and utterly different ways. And I know this because in the latter stages, even of my brother's life, so if you imagine my brother's now in a hospice and he's dying and he's got days to live, probably hours, I think one of the things that I understood more clearly is that sometimes death is not as easy as we make it out to be as Christians. So my brother, who was born again probably at 10 and knew theology and knew all sorts of different things, I sat there on many occasions when he'd been married for over 40 years and he said things to his wife that he never said in life, that were harsh and hard. And it just shows you the intensity of those moments that are there. And I know that those things still remain, because even when I speak to Janet sometimes on the phone or even when she stays with us, she often refers back to those moments. And so that is the intensity. And to think there is no intensity here, that is some sort of story that we're reading on our Bible readings, we have to think of the Bible in a completely different way. Does that make sense? Okay. But then she goes on and says this. But she says, what she says next is incredible. But even now I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you. Isn't that an extraordinary statement? Even though I've lost everything, even though the thing that's very close to me, I believe in you and I believe in what you can do. So Martha doesn't know the end of the story at this point. You know the end of the story. I don't know the end of the story. So she has no idea what Jesus is about to do, and she doesn't know if he has come to bring her comfort or to raise him from the dead. She has no clue. She doesn't know if he's just there to give her a hug. But however, what she does say is this: I believe in you, which is what that phrase is about. I know that but even now I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you. Why? Because she knows who he is and what he can do. And that's very important. It's an important thing in terms of you and I and our faith in God, that I not only know who he is, but what he can do. See, who he is and what he can do are two things that are actually inseparable. Who he is and what he can do. And sometimes people worship who he is, and some people worship what he can do. And some people's faith is based on what he can do. So your faith goes down when he hasn't done so much. And some people's faith is so much that they know about him. They read all the books. They know, I know about Jesus. But actually, they don't believe he can do anything. It's important that we know who he is and we know what he can do. And you can check your life by thinking, what sort of Christian am I? Where am I on the scale? Am I know God, or am I know his ability? And that's really important. Because we move and we have to look at that. And that's what Martha's come through. She's come to this conclusion and she says, I believe in you and I believe in your ability. I believe in you and your ability. Remember the story in Mark 9. The father brings the son to Jesus. Do you remember him? And he has these demonic seizures. Do you remember this guy foaming from the mouth? All that sort of stuff. Remember, he throws himself into water and fire. That's another story about water and fire. But he throws himself into water and fire. And also, he was mute. So the story goes on. And the disciples, if you remember, they're in training. And they sort of have failed. Do you remember them failing? Oh, so many times I've failed. He says, and Jesus said to him, if you can, and Jesus said to him, if you can, all things are possible for the one who believes. Immediately, the father of the child cried out, I believe, help my unbelief. And when Jesus saw that a crowd came running together, he rebuked the unclean spirit, saying to it, you mute and deaf spirit, I command you, come out of him and never enter him again. And after crying out and convulsing him terribly, it came out, and the boy was like a corpse. And most of them said, ah, he's dead. But Jesus said, took him by the hand and lifted him up, and he arose. Mark 9. See, all things are possible for the one who believes in who? Him, Jesus. So which Jesus do we believe in? It's so important because it affects everything that we do. So I believe that Jesus can raise the dead. I believe that Jesus can cast out demons. I believe that Jesus can make the mute speak. And I can believe he will do that today. That's really, really important. Else you're believing in a historic Jesus, not an alive Jesus. When Jesus rose from the dead, he's alive. He is alive. So we're not reading a textbook. We're reading a reality. And that reality affects everything that we do from that point. If I believe in him and I believe he's alive, I actually believe that the same things that he was doing then, he can do today. Now that affects my life. It affects everything they do. Therefore, I believe that when I share the gospel, people are going to get saved. That's why I believe. I believe in him and I believe in his ability. Because I believe in him, I believe in his ability to what? Save. Yes? Are you with me? Okay. I also believe that Jesus can raise the dead. I believe him because he is the resurrection and the life, which we will never come to. But also, I believe in his ability. So here's the question. Don't answer me. I can think about it. Do you and I believe that Jesus can raise the dead?
Yes.
Doctors?
No.
Toffee, isn't it? Ben?
No.
You don't believe that Jesus can raise the dead?
No, you said, do I believe doctors can raise the dead?
Ah, no. Doctors can't. Do you believe, doctor, that Jesus can raise the dead? You see, these things take it away from an intellectual, impersonal thing that we can have. Our faith can be intellectual and impersonal to a personal thing that we believe in him and his ability. I believe he can save. I believe he can raise from the dead. I'm going to nearly through. So, because you're only going to get me headings. This was actually my introduction. I believe that we can pray for the sick and they will be healed. Because I believe him and what he can do. Now, this affects your very... Now, here's the interesting thing. You can believe that. Now, because I believe it, I will do it. And here's the thing, you see, because that's what Martha got. I believe in him and I believe in his ability. Therefore, I will run. I will run to him. And that's the difference, you see, because our belief then is academic. It is not shaping our lives. I believe that the mute can speak, that the demons can be released, that the gospel can be preached, and that the dead can be raised. Is it not the kingdom of God? See, and these things are therefore affect the way that I live. So you think, okay, this is what I'm going to do. So what? I believe that Jesus, the same Jesus that healed this young boy, is in me and working through me. And that there's no obstacle to his power. And I must live my life appropriately to do that. So there are three things that I wanted you to know. These are the three things, and then I'm through. Okay, so the first one is this. I'm not going to say much about this because I'm through. Because Ben was much better than me. How does he introduce himself? He says, hello, my name is. Because he introduces himself as I am. I am the resurrection and the life. We can do all of that if you like. Meaning this. That if he's God, if Jesus was God, do you believe Jesus was God?
Yes.
Now, because we believe Jesus is God, therefore Lazarus was not an obstacle to him. Why? Because he's God, he gave him life. I am the resurrection and the life. I am. I gave him that life. It's not a problem. So this is the thing. So that is important on how we view things, and it is what we what are our obstacles? There is no obstacles for God. There is no obstacles for God. God could send revival in a moment. God can save people. There isn't an obstacle for God because the Jesus was God. I am the person that we believe in is God. Therefore, he can do all sorts of different things. Okay? That was the first point. I can't remember what the second point is. Oh, yes. The second point is this. Resurrection and life. Here's the issue. He says, I am the resurrection and life. He asks Martha the question, and Martha answers a question which is technical. And the technical question she answers, she says, "Yes, I believe that you can, on the day of whatever, that you can raise people up." So what? And he said, "No." He said, "You might believe that, but actually, I am the resurrection and the life. You are looking at the resurrection and the life." And there's a difference between believing in something as an abstract thing. I believe that you can do this on that day. You can raise people up and that sort of stuff. And actually said, "You know, I'm not believing whether you believe that one day these things might happen. I want to know whether you believe that the person in front of you is the resurrection and the life." Why is that important? Because our relationship with Jesus is personal. We're believing in a person. We're not attending a church and going to a service and going through a process, and it's not something that we're believing in a person. I have a personal relationship with Jesus. And this person that I have, that is my friend, is the resurrection and the life. Ooh. And it's like saying, "Yes, I believe that Jesus, you know, I believe the bread of life and all the light. Yeah, I believe the light of the world." No, Jesus is the light of the world. The one that's, can you catch the depth and the power and the magnificence of what Jesus is saying? He's saying, "I am the resurrection and the life." That's the one that is in you. The person of resurrection and life is in you. So we get to that point. I was going to quote some magnificent stuff on Carson, but we haven't got that. And then the last one was this, which is the huge thing. He turns to Martha, who, don't forget, remember the Martha and Martha? Of course they believed in Jesus, did they not? And she'd answered the question, but she asks this question. He says to her, "Do you believe this?" Why? Why does he ask that question? And she answers the question and she says, "I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God." Why on earth is it, "Do you believe this?" Because we can do this. Our, you know, Callie's faith can be based on me, can't it? Your children's faith can be based on your mum and dad. You know, Dan can come because Phil and Joe told him to, and he obeyed. This is the real important. We can say, we live in a church. We sort of, you know, what does Mary think? What does the newspapers think? What do the scribes and Pharisees, what do they say? No, that's not the issue, Martha. The issue is, what do you believe personally? Do you personally believe who I am and what I can do? That actually is the most life-changing thing that can ever happen to us. Because that statement alone of belief is this, because that will change my life forever. I believe this. Do you know what that stops preachers? Are you ready, Joe? That stops preachers. That stops preachers trying to persuade you and trying to coerce you and trying to make you and trying to get you and sort of wind you up. Which I know that some people said to me, "Nigel, that's what you do. You wind us up on a Sunday." But do you see what I mean? Can you imagine the most releasing thing for the church is summed up in that question and summed up in that answer? Do you believe this? Because if you believe this, your whole life is changed because of that one statement. So I want to ask you a question. When Jesus says, "I am the resurrection and the life," do you believe this?